welcome back to the second hour. Grace Baldridge, Hassan Piker,
Ron
Thompson. This is going to be fun. I just realized I hadn't been on a show with Hassan in, it's been probably like,
it's been a very long time.
6 months, which we used to do. We used to hit Pop Trigger every morning together.
Oh, and sure. Then I got cut.
And then he got hard cut.
I got wow. A hard cut from Amir, the executive
producer. Sounds like
producer.
There's a good story there.
Well, yeah. the problem was that I was threatened by his masculinity. I need to be the most
toxic.
Masculine person on every panel I'm on. Wow. And
guys,
that's why I'm wearing flannel and he's
many
wearing a
of you
shirt.
Don't know this, but Grace is the definition of toxic masculinity.
Oh my gosh, you're crazy. Well, we have a lot to get into today. We're gonna be talking about more allegations of sexual misconduct and assault coming out of Hollywood. We're gonna be talking about Chance the Rapper. I know that's something that Hassan is eager to talk about. Twitter verification, is verification validation? That's going to be a conversation. And then we also have some news coming out of TSA that is a little disheartening and reasons why we can say fuck on French radio.
Oh.
So with that said, let's just jump right into this first story. Today, the New York Times released a report detailing allegations of sexual misconduct by comedian Louis C.K. It is a detailed report. They spoke to a number of women. In part, what they are saying is now, after years of unsubstantiated rumors about Louis C.K. masturbating in front of associates, women are coming forward to describe what they experienced. Even amid the current burst of sexual misconduct accusations against powerful men, the stories about Louis C.K. stand out because he has so few equals in comedy. Louis C.K. is a huge comedic titan. Now, when the Times reached out to Louis C.K.'s publicist, whose name is Louis K., they said Louis is not going to answer any questions. Also, the Thursday premiere of his movie, I Love You Daddy, was abruptly canceled. This also raises some questions about the anecdotes that Louis C.K. tells in his own comedy. Some are pointing to the questionable material that is in this movie that was premiering, I Love You Daddy. There are a lot of stories. One of those stories comes from comedian Rebecca Corey. Rebecca tells her story about how she was on set for a 2005 pilot with Louis C.K. and he approached her asking if he could masturbate in front of her. Now, when she said no and also reminded him that he had a daughter and a pregnant wife at the time, he just said that he had issues. And then this is what she says happened next. Word quickly reached the show's executive producers, Courtney Cox and David Arquette, who both confirmed the incident. What happened to Rebecca on that set was awful, Ms. Cox said in an email, adding that she felt outrage and shock. My concern was to create an environment where Rebecca felt safe, protected, and heard, she said. They discussed curtailing the production. Ms. Corey decided to continue with the show. Things were going well for me, Ms. Corey said in the statement, and I had no interest in being the person who shut down a production. A lot of what you're hearing in this report is women with experiencing fear of speaking out because this is such an incredibly powerful figure in Hollywood, also represented by a very powerful manager in Hollywood. The article calls out his manager, Dave Becky, who certain women say tried to silence them from sharing their story. Dave Becky, Louis C.K.'s manager, wanted them to stop telling people about their encounter with Louis C.K. Lee Kernis, one of the women's managers at the time, confirmed on Thursday that he had a conversation in which he told Mr. Becky that Louis C.K.'s behavior toward the women had been offensive. Mr. Kernis also said that Mr. Becky was upset that the women were talking openly about the incident. Now, when the Times reached out to Mr. Becky, he said that he doesn't recall the specifics of this conversation, which took place between two comedians, a Ms. Goodman and a Ms. Wolof, but he did know that he never threatened anyone. So he's come out saying that that is not something that he did. He right now represents Kevin Hart, Aziz Ansari, Amy Poehler, as well as a number of other comedic performers. So that's something that they want to point out when it comes to the abuse of power in the industry and people that were complicit in this. Tig Notaro is a comedian whose Amazon series One Mississippi lists Louis C.K. as an executive producer, and she has spoken out against Louis C.K. She says, in part, sadly, I've come to learn that Louis C.K.'s victims are not only real, she said by email, but many are actual friends of mine within the comedy community, like Ms. Corey, who confided in her, she said. I think it's just important to note that Ms. Notaro is coming out and speaking because the comedy community is so insular and protective, and it is important that we celebrate these voices that are coming forward and standing with the women. Now, people are wondering, what is Louis C.K. saying? Now, he hasn't released a statement as of this taping, but some women are saying that after the fact, he did apologize to them, but those apologies have some troubling implications. For example, Ms. Corey says that she received an email from Louis C.K., which then followed up with a phone call from Louis C.K. apologizing for his behavior in 2005. This took place in 2015. She says when he phoned her, he said he was sorry for shoving her in a bathroom. Ms. Corey replied that he had never done that, but he had instead asked to masturbate in front of her, responding in a shaky voice. He acknowledged it and said, "I used to misread people back then," she recalled. So I know that's a lot of information. I wanted to just break down the article. There's a lot in there, and I would urge you to please read the full article so you can get the full context of the story. Now I want to toss over to you guys. What was your response in reading this?
Were you surprised? Because
it had been out there, huh?
Yeah. I've been a fan of Louis C.K. and you heard some of these rumors in the past, and I actually want to make an interesting note about that too. Like, Gawker uncovered the majority of the things that the New York Times discussed back in 2012, if I'm not mistaken. And at the time, you thought they were unsubstantiated rumors, that you thought that they were potentially accusations, and Gawker already had like a troubled history. So people didn't really pay much attention to it. And because, like you said, because Louis C.K. is so powerful and his manager was so powerful, because he's such a comedic powerhouse and comedy is such an insular community, people kind of kept it under wraps for a very long time.
Public opinion hadn't swayed that way. So one of the co-authors of this New York Times article was also an author on the Harvey Weinstein piece.
Yeah.
So I think that what we have seen recently is this snowball effect. If Harvey Weinstein can be taken down, who else has been abusing their power can be taken down. So I think that it's good to bring up the Gawker piece. I've seen that on Twitter. A lot of people are saying, hey, Gawker was already talking about this. Why didn't anyone care? Because the unfortunate truth of the matter was is that no one believed these women yet. They were saying, "Oh, it's rumor." Louis C.K. himself, when he was asked about this, would always dismiss it as rumor. "I'm not going to address it because if I talk about rumors, then it makes them bigger than they are." Well, now you have women that are speaking on the record who feel as though they are to be believed because if Harvey Weinstein can be taken down, then why can't we take down the bigwig of comedy as well, who has been abusing his power for years and years and years?
Yeah, it was just a cry in the night before, and now the whole culture is swinging in this direction. And as you say, the snowball effect. It felt very Cosby-ish before, you know. Cosby was known for a long time. And even that account that you read with the young actress feeling as though, well, I've complained, but I don't want to shut this whole production down. Back in the early Cosby stories, you kind of heard that same thing. Like, you heard, who's going to believe me? They're going to believe me, or they're going to believe this comedy titan? And you also heard, I don't want to end my career. I don't want to shut this production down. I don't want to shut my career down. So I think there's so many reasons that people didn't step forward before. Mm-hmm. But now, in this culture and climate, it's safe to step forward. And so all the things that we had heard or read in Gawker now get some authenticity because so many people are coming forward now, are comfortable with it.
At this stage, Louis has not released a statement, although he did cancel his premiere. He also canceled an appearance on Late Night with Stephen Colbert. So I'm wondering, what do you think is the move from here? Will he be releasing a statement? Like, I don't know what happens here. Or do you think that we'll see charges pressed for some of this?
There's a statute of limitation when it comes to this sort of stuff, and depending on the severity of the crime itself.
Do you think we'll see more women come forward?
Yeah, I mean, there's always obviously a civil suit that could potentially be launched against Louis C.K. And I hope there are some punitive measures, because look, we need to have a system of deterrence. Like, we need to make sure that in the future, people do feel unsafe. And by the way, I don't just mean men, women too. Anyone who coerces others, abuses their power, their position of power to gain sexual favors from unwanted victims or even in certain instances abuses them physically, it should be punished in some capacity. And most importantly, be fearful that there could be some sort of widespread movement that outs them. Mm-hmm. And having said that, though, there are a lot of accusations being launched at the moment. We also must not forget, while we should believe women, because the majority of the time they are absolutely true, and they get nothing out of coming out, they have everything to lose when they come out and talk about these things, and it's also emotionally tolling. we shouldn't forget that there is such a thing as due process in the end of the day. But obviously, if there are, if there are, you know, 20 people identifying identical instances and with one person, and that's usually a pattern that we've seen with Bill Cosby. Everyone usually says the exact same things. Everyone has similar experiences. Same with Louis C.K. He masturbated in front of them, you know, pulled him into the room. Harvey Weinstein got naked in front of them in a hotel room. Like, their acts are usually similar. So there's a pattern that we can observe to assess whether or not there's validity. And I think in this instance, absolutely. But again, let's not forget that there is such a thing as due process, because there are certain people that have been accused as well, where there's only one victim. And before an actual like case is launched against them, to vilify someone publicly is also could potentially be problematic down the line.
Yeah, there's been no presumption of innocence in many of these cases. And it's a really interesting point that Hassan makes, because there has been no, well, let's wait for due process to take its course, for precisely the reason that Hassan is identifying, which is it's the same MO with all of these women in all these different cases, with the Weinstein case, with this case. And, you know, as these stories come forward, and this has the additional element where she actually went to producers and said, hey, this just happened. And so they corroborated also.
Many of the women in the article, and they have corroborated their stories with other people that they spoke to following the incident. So this isn't, you know, just, you know, women coming forward and seeking out the New York. These were, the New York Times really did their due diligence to track down these people and get statements from other people on the set, or other, their managers, other people they worked with.
They made contemporaneous complaints to their friends, like, you'll never believe what just happened type stuff. And you need that to create a situation that clearly points to the legitimacy of a claim and of an assault. But the reason that so many companies are closing down production, the reason that they're reshooting movies right now with Kevin Spacey not in it anymore, and the reason is because of what Hassan is talking about, which is that these stories are credible, and they're credible because all the elements are the same. The MO is there from too many people, and as Grace says, and those people told others at the time.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, we need to move on to our next story, which, you know, it's just a little bit of a pivot away. Terry Crews has filed a police report alleging sexual assault by a high-level Hollywood executive. This has been confirmed by the Los Angeles Police Department. Since Crews' alleged incident occurred last year, it is within the statute of limitations for sexual assault in the state of California. Last week, The Hollywood Reporter reported that WME agent Adam Vennett was the subject of Crews' tweets. Vennett was put on leave by WME. Crews has not publicly identified Vennett, however, and Vennett has not yet commented. Now, you may remember that Crews did tweet about an incident that happened to him, and in part, here is what he was saying. This whole thing with Harvey Weinstein is giving me PTSD. Why? Because this kind of thing happened to me. My wife and I were at a Hollywood function last year, and a high-level Hollywood executive came over to me and groped my privates. He says that his wife saw everything, and that this agent just looked at him like he was totally crazy, and he grinned like a jerk, he says. He thought about beating him up, but then he knew that the headline would be 240-pound black man stomps out Hollywood honcho, so he decided not to do that. But Crews said he talked to everyone he knew who worked with the executive about what happened to him, adding that the executive called him the next day to apologize, but never really explained why he did what he did. He didn't want to take it further at the time because he didn't want to be ostracized, which he says is, quote, par for the course when the predator has power and influence. Ending with, who is going to believe you? This is a this story is pretty crazy, because we do not talk about sexual assault when it comes to men. A lot of times unfortunately the power dynamic is such that women are the victims in these cases. So it is very powerful that Terry Crews came forward. He also ended saying that he hopes that his story will deter predator and encourage someone who feels hopeless. Men are just underreport sexual assault. So we know that these numbers, it's hard to track down the actual statistics behind this, but I want to get a reaction from you both. Now that he is going to the LAPD, there are charges being filed. This is something that is new and different in this playing field.
Yeah, but it's got a lot of the same elements that we've just been talking about, right?
Guy power who's dynamic.
Powerful, as you say, powerful power dynamic that is in favor of the assaulter. And that person who is assaulted has no power, is worried about losing what little they have, and in his case, destroying his career. What's changed is now he's grown in stature And as Grace mentioned before, the atmosphere has changed. And this Weinstein even notes the fact that with the Weinstein allegations coming out and there being more discussion of this, he felt, wow, I want to step forward my story because I'm getting flashbacks about this and it's pretty ugly.
Yeah, making this as unsafe as a space for predators as possible is one of the really overwhelming positives that's come out of this really gross situation. I mean, and by the way, I want to also acknowledge for the previous story and this one, the bravery of people coming out, because I mentioned before already, but they have literally everything to lose and nothing to gain from coming out and talking about these. And we have seen in the past people not believing the victims that do end up coming out. So it's good that, like I said, I'm a big dude too. Like I'm 6'4", I'm also 240 pounds, and I've been groped before. Mm-hmm. Like, and obviously everyone has a different way of dealing with it. For me, it was a different experience. Like I was confused by it, obviously, and I think you might even remember I discussed this event with you too. Another friend of ours from the same dude the same night, Will, also was somewhat assaulted in a weird, in a similar fashion. And
what did you do? Just ignore it?
Well, I told the person multiple times, like, back off. No, like, I don't want to be involved in this. And then he continued to do it. So I just left, not realizing that he would continue to do it. But what I learned from that story is that in that instance, if you don't deal with it or if you don't inform people, then he can go and commit the same things on other people as well, the unsuspecting victims in that same instance. So it does happen to men as well. And
there's such a stigma around men talking about it. So I think that it is really bold and brave of Terry Crews to come forward and sort of say, all right, I will be the first person to say that this happens to men as well. We need to acknowledge that there is a problem in this industry. It does disproportionately affect women, but men are not excluded from these numbers. Yeah. And I absolutely celebrate him for doing so. Again, we can't stress this enough. You have everything to lose and nothing to gain by coming forward. It's incredibly difficult for these people to do so. What I think is going to be really interesting to see is now that there are charges to be filed, and at the time of this reporting, the LAPD has not responded to a request from Business Insider on the specifics of what they will be investigating and looking into, but that there were charges filed is, I think, an important step in just dissuading predators from furthering what was a very toxic culture in this industry.
Look, and by the way, in these instances, it's hard to even have a dialogue about what men might be feeling. Because I've experienced this. Like I've listened to many different comedians and other performers try to unpack like a different perspective in this instance, like perspective of a male who feels that maybe they were in a situation where they might have been the perpetrators. And the thing is, like, there needs to be more communication about what to do and what not to do. This is actually a piece I'm working on currently, and I'm talking to a bunch of female journalists right now. Like trying to figure out what the boundaries are and explaining them and communicating them as best as possible. Because I think that's one of the issues is that because we come from such puritanical roots, especially in regards to the way we understand sexuality and sex, and it's such a taboo subject to discuss openly and also even in private, we don't have great sexual education. And I don't just mean that in a reproductive health sense, I mean that in like sexual etiquette, boundaries.
Consent.
And consent, yeah. We need to have a serious, open and honest dialogue about what it means to consent and establish maybe new boundaries, like serious boundaries with potential legal implications around consent. Because and I'm not excusing violent predators, but sex is a confusing thing, especially amongst the opposite genders. Like it's male and female relationships is all I can speak to, but it's complicated, it's confusing, and there's a lot of like mystery involved in it. And because of that, because of the mysterious nature of it, it's difficult to assess what you're doing and how it might be perceived from the other side. One thing that you do to someone might be totally acceptable to another person, mm-hmm. and work in your favor. So the reason why I'm mentioning this side is to just to say, look, if you're fearful that you might have been in a situation where you feel as though you've done something wrong, understand what you're doing, try to understand for future instances how your actions might be received.
You know, in the male situation, I can see the water being muddied, like, hey man, just shake it off. That guy's crazy, he's weird. But in the male-female situation, which is the majority of these situations, I don't see the water as muddy at all. In fact, if somebody grabs and gropes you, that's clearly out of bounds. Somebody whips out their penis and start, well, you can stop right there. If they whip out their penis, that's clearly right.
100%. That wasn't even what I was referring to. Oh, those are very obvious instances, right? But what I'm referring to is like, what people don't understand, and this is all what I got from talking to a bunch of other female journalists about this, is like what people perceive as sexual harassment is very personal to them and differs from case to case. And in a lot of the feedback that I got, like for example, very, very easy one that almost all men and women commit, because I used to give advice to all my friends on, you know, how to text girls and guys as well. Constantly pursuing someone could be harassment, and you might be doing that right now and you have no idea. But like it's, and part of it's because Hollywood has kind of trained us in a way, in pop culture has trained us in a way to look at certain things as romantic, and people don't really understand and they give in to their lizard brains, and you know, you constantly text the girl thinking like, oh, eventually this will change, I'll get out of the friend zone. Like, you won't. And those behaviors that you think might be creepy could potentially be harassing the other person. So that's what I was referring to, not obvious instances of like groping or doing something that you know is bad.
Right.
You know what I mean?
When it comes to the sexuality of the situation, I think the male female stuff is clearer, but I think the male male stuff, I'm kind of glad you told your story, because I'm thinking, yeah, that, what do you do in that situation? Do you just move on, or do you just, you know, like this is Terry Crews could have just moved on, could have just said, you know, that was so effed up.
Hopefully this is the beginning to a comprehensive reform in the entertainment industry. Now we have to go to a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to be taking a hard turn away from this conversation. We're going to be talking about Chance the Rapper. We also are going to be having a conversation on Twitter and verification. I want to know how many times Hassan can plug his Twitter account. I would like to hear your thoughts. So please tweet us at hashtag TYTLive. Over under 10? Over under 10. I'm saying around like 7, I think. 7.
We'll see.
We'll see after the break.
Hassan the Hunt.
Welcome back to the second hour of TYT Live. Grace Baldridge, Hassan Piker, Mark Thompson. Thanks for staying with us. I'm just going to read a couple TYT Lives before we head into these next stories. Joshua Olson says, spoiling us today, not only did we get a wicked first hour, we get an equally powerful second. Mark sticking around being awesome with Hassan, Grace, hell yeah.
Does that hell mean like normally the hours are not as strong?
Don't question it. Don't dig into it.
I don't know that you can reverse engineer it like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying.
Papa G says he apologized for pushing her into a bathroom when that wasn't what happened to her. So who did he push into a bathroom? And they do delve into that a little bit into the New York Times article, raising questions about Louis C.K.'s apologies and what they actually might be implying. But please check out the full article. We can't cover all of that here. That said, let's jump into the second hour, starting off with Chance the Rapper. Why did Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel walk out on Chance the Rapper, who attended a city council meeting? I'm not really sure. Let's break this down a little bit. You may know Chance the Rapper is a Grammy Award-winning artist, but he is also a very civically engaged Chicagoan. He wants to make sure that the kids of Chicago receive a proper public education. He's even funded up to $1 million of his own money into serving public education. He's also raised millions more through outside sources. When he attended a city council meeting, he was there to oppose Rahm Emanuel's efforts to invest $95 million into a brand new police academy for the city. Now, seems like the mayor stepped out, but we do have a video clip of what Chance the Rapper said. Let's take a look.
I guess the mayor had to step out when I came up, but it's cool because I'm here to talk to you guys right now. I think you guys are familiar with the work that I've been doing, doing a lot of work with, thank you guys. We got so much time. Working very closely with Pearl Academy, which is right down the street from where this proposed police academy is going to be at. The school, with just $100,000 in 3 years, is about to make some transformative changes. It'd be awesome, though, if we could get them pools at their school. Or a library, a new library, or a museum, or any of the things that are proposed in the budget for this $95 million cop academy. It's a very simple thing that you guys have to do. We should understand that financially, this proposed plan doesn't make sense. We don't have $95 million. We're just asking for $10 million today to purchase the land. But we don't have the rest of the money to do it. So why let them go ahead with this right now? There's a lot of different services that need to be funded. Mental health services, which I'm very sure you heard people say before. Obviously, schooling is my big thing. But there's a lot of ways to transform the city that don't have anything to do with police training.
So to provide a little more context about what Chance is referring to, in the wake of a scathing federal investigation into Chicago's police department, Emanuel proposed a $95 million police and firefighter training center in July to get the department back on its feet after the Justice Department found it had severely deficient training and used excessive force on people of color. But a lot of people are saying that the plan doesn't make sense. That's what Chance was there to protest. Also, he's citing that there have been widespread school closures and looming interest payments of over $1 billion in the coming decades, and maybe that's where they should be focusing the city's resources. Other opponents of this proposition take issue with spending so much, even though Dean Angelo, the head of Chicago's police union, has vigorously disputed the DOJ's findings in their investigation, among them that the CPD targeted people of color. So there's a lot going on here. I'm just a little curious about why the mayor stepped out when perhaps his most civically and publicly engaged citizen took the mic. What do you think was happening here?
This is what I'm talking about today on today's breakdown. So I did a deeper dive into this. It's a very interesting story. It's kind of like a microcosm of what is going on in communities of color and how they're underfunded consistently across the country and how we deal with certain problems that arise in those communities. So it's a very interesting story. So let's start from the top. First of all, by the way, Rahm Emanuel, Chance the Rapper's dad was Rahm Emanuel's top aide until recently. So their connection runs deep. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, like, they've had an ongoing conversation, and I think because Chance is such a good guy and has done so much for Chicago public schools, he's raised $2.2 million in the past year alone for the arts programs in Chicago. And it's very difficult for Rahm to like genuinely face him and be like, no, we need more policing in this neighborhood. That's how we'll stop the violence, especially as a Democratic mayor. So let me give you guys some facts. So $95 million is the cost of this fire and police training academy that they're putting together. And Chicago currently has a massive problem of attrition. There's a lot of police officers that are leaving the force. There are a lot that are retiring and some that are being fired. So they need to make it as sexy as possible to become a police officer. Now, they're starting this in the West Side, which is a problematic neighborhood. So they sold a, hold on, I'm gonna give you the exact detail because I want to do the story justice. So they sold the Riverside to private industry to accumulate some funds, but they don't have $95 million. They only had 20, 10 of which was allocated to the land, just the land to purchase, to put this fire and police academy onto. What Chance was arguing was that, look, with $100,000 just across the street, we made transformative changes in this school alone. And because because certain social budgets are so underfunded in Chicago, how are you going to justify a $95 million police academy when we don't have the rest of the money to even build the police academy? Why don't we take these funds and actually redistribute them back into social programs that desperately need it? Now, Chicago actually had to borrow $275 million from JPMorgan and Chase recently because they have a massive pension problem. They can't pay pensions off for teachers, and then on top of that, still have and still be able to fund their schools properly. There's currently a case, I believe, ongoing where Chicago public school systems are only getting 15% of the state budget, but actually host 20% of the state's entire eligible, like school eligible youth. And they believe that it is obviously somewhat, maybe a little bit racist, because 90% of the CPS is students of color. There are 90% of it is black and Hispanic students.
Yeah, Mark, I want to get your response to this story.
Well, no, this is really interesting stuff from Hassan, because I didn't know the relationship between Chance the Rapper, the father, yeah, and the mayor. So that was kind of interesting. The cops and helping them and funding them and throwing money at a new police training program, that's good politics for Rahm Emanuel. And that's the reason I suspect that he gravitated toward that solution. Clearly, Chance is right. That's where the money should go, into social programs, into all these programs that Chance has identified, particularly if they don't have the money to actually step up with the rest of the plan. So I think... on this one, and I didn't know that Chance the Rapper had contributed so much of his own money these many programs in Chicago. I mean, not the Trump donation where, you know, he kind of pledges it and then he doesn't actually write the check.
Yeah.
This actually happened. I think that the Chicago mayor pulled away, as Hassan had mentioned, because he probably couldn't face the music, and he politically made a decision that is all about politics and less about helping his city.
Yeah, they still voted overwhelmingly in favor. They're buying the lot. Like 48-1 was the final count, and they're still going forward with this program. By the way, Rahm Emanuel's reaction was that when asked, like, why did you leave before Chance had his 3 minutes, he got up and said, I had to step out to call my mom and congratulate her for her 85th birthday. And then when they further asked, like, so why are we still going forward with the funding of this of this police academy, he said, well, this will help the economy of the West Side the overwhelming amount of like candidates and police that are going to be in that neighborhood will supply the local economy in ways that we can't foresee yet. And also it'll provide a sense of safety. Now, community policing is incredibly important, and there are plenty of studies that back this up. And I think overall, I don't think it's as nefarious. It's not as black and white. This is not an awful idea versus what Chance is saying is a much better idea. I think training is incredibly necessary. It's vital in most instances, especially if they have, and Chicago has a lot of interesting diversity programs that they're starting now, especially if they are able to bring some of these youths from certain neighborhoods to go and police those neighborhoods in the end. Like if you have actually, black cops from the South Side growing up and then policing their own neighborhoods, that's a good step in the right direction. You know what I mean?
And look, you said a lot, but I would say that that's true. That probably a lot of what the Chicago mayor says is accurate, that it will help that area economically. It's also true that they have a real problem with the Chicago cops and these incidents that seem to be racially motivated. So they need to do something. You can't just pretend that didn't happen. And he's feeling political heat. He's also feeling legitimate heat. I mean, the heat of a community that's outraged. And so you do need to retrain the cops. So there's some of this. It's not exactly a situation which is clear cut. Having said that, it does appear that I was unaware of all the stuff that Chance the Rapper knows about this community, and I suspect his recommendations are sound.
Yeah, and I also think that it's just frustrating that as a public servant, you walk out and it's sort of a cop out for those 3 minutes that Chance the Rapper has the floor, because you know it's going to put you in a tricky spot. And I am disappointed in that response. Even if you disagree, you're a public servant. Engage with your citizens. That's the least that you can do. We have to move on to 100%. Our
plug one charity. I think is amazing.
Yeah, please plug a charity
specifically related to this. So obviously Chance has his own charity, which is great. You can find that out on the internet by Googling it. But the one I want to talk about is ontheblock.org. It's Mothers Against Senseless Killing Mask. It's literally moms going out and sitting on the block with youths and trying to uplift their communities. They have soirees. So go donate some money, check them out. They're actually pretty awesome. I remember I remember listening to the founder, and it was so impactful that it like stuck with me. So check them out. Mothers Against Senseless Killing, ontheblock.org.
Awesome. All right, let's get to our last. Oh, not last. We have a couple more stories. Okay, this is the Twitter story, Haas. You ready?
Oh, yeah. I would only like to be referred to as at Hassan the Hun.
All right, I can do that.
We call each other by our Twitter handles.
What's your Twitter handle, Mark?
Mark T. Live.
@MarkTLive.
Yeah. All right. Hassan the Hun is too.
If you're a peasant like me and not verified on Twitter, don't hold your breath, because Twitter has paused their verification requests after criticism surrounding Jason Kessler. So here's a little bit of what we're talking about. Twitter is pausing all general verification requests, the company announced Thursday. The decision comes days after Twitter verified Jason Kessler, the organizer of the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville that resulted in the death of counter-protester Heather Heyer. Now, Twitter has commented on this publicly. They said, from Twitter support, verification was meant to authenticate identity and voice, but it is interpreted as an endorsement or an indicator of importance. We recognize that we have created this confusion and need to resolve it. We have paused all general verifications while we work and will report back soon. The Twitter CEO, Jack Dorsey, also commented on Twitter using the 280 characters. Damn you. He says, quote, "We should have communicated faster on this yesterday. Our agents have been following our verification policy correctly, but we realized some time ago the system is broken and needs to be reconsidered. And we failed by not doing anything about it, working now to fix faster." Now, Twitter was all a buzz commenting on what they think should be the solution to verification leading into validation. One response that I want to read and then get a response from you at Hassan the Hun is, if verification were really intended to authenticate identity, an easy solution to this would be verifying all real users' identities with blue check marks, would be a direct solution to Twitter's bot problem too, which we know that Twitter has a major bot problem. So, at Hassan the Hun, we've decided we're only going to be referring to each other with our Twitter handles.
Also, Hassan D. Piker on Instagram.
Sure.
This is a story about Twitter, but I'll.
Sure. You are very active on Twitter.
I am.
You are verified as well.
Verified and incredibly active.
All right. So, how can we distinguish verification from validation?
So, here's what the thing is. Twitter is already known to be a company in chaos and basically being held up by being held up on this little ledge by Donald Trump, sometimes Kanye West, and just a bunch of Nazis regularly tweeting about dumb shit, right? Mm-hmm. So now it's back in the news because of all the Russia stuff. There's a bunch of bots on the platform. The platform's a mess, okay, in general, and this is an avid user. But a while ago, Twitter quietly decided to change its verification protocols to verify everyone. So that what that person is suggesting actually is Twitter policy. They were originally going to verify anyone and everyone who could provide identification. It was supposed to be validation to show that this is indeed a real person. Now, they kind of paused that and went back to the old protocol, I guess. And I think this is that like middle of the ground approach that they are famous for not really dealing with a problem and just kind of leaving things undone. And
just kind
that's
of halfway
why,
dealing
yeah, just
with
kind of halfway
it and then pausing the process.
Because look, the reality is once they unverified Milo Yiannopoulos, who is now fully suspended and fully banned from the platform, once they did that, it showed to everyone that verification was more than just validation, because Milo Yiannopoulos didn't change identities. He's still fucking Milo Yiannopoulos. But because they had unverified him because of his frequent abuse and misuse of the platform, they care about the blue check mark more than just identification, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
So there needs to be probably two different tools of verification. One step verification is that you're a real person, and then another one if you're a person of notoriety. I guess it sounds kind of weird if you're like a public figure.
Yeah,
Mark,
you would get that second.
Are you verified
check.
On Twitter?
Let's not rub it in, Grace. I am not. Mark T. Live continues to be a person of the people. At Mark T. Live.
Sorry to
I am blue checklist. You always get these different things. Send them this, send them that. Fox, when I was working nightly at Fox, was trying to get me verified. And they had a kind of protocol. But right in the middle of that whole procedure, they pulled the general protocol and made it something else. So I'm kind of with Hassan, though, in the fact that you're going to have to come up with two different kinds of verifications if you're serious about this. Verify that everybody is a real person, and then set those people apart in a different kind of verification who are of a higher profile, public people. That way we know that the tweets that claim to be from them are them. End of problem.
Yeah, there's one Twitter user said it won't be seen as an endorsement if you start checking the average Joe. By that, I mean you should have a more streamlined and automatic process requiring an ID card. Look at what Keybase.io is doing. So is that sort of what I'm hearing from you guys on the panel? There needs to be a twofold verification process, one that's just for identity and one that is sort of separate for public figures, peasants.
They do that, as they say, with a lot of different sites. I think PayPal does it. In certain ways, if you want to set up a PayPal account, you have to send them a photo ID, and it has to be clear that you are who you say you are.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. Financial transactions. I think they do it on Bumble, too. Don't ask me how I know
that. You think you know that? They do?
I think they do that. Damn, I'm just giving free plugs away today. Hassan D. Piker is my Instagram, everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Hassan the Hun on Twitter, Hassan D. Piker on Instagram, Mark T. Live on Twitter.
I'm Mark Thompson
Get
TV.
Get these people verified, Jack. What are you doing?
All right, we got to move on.
Go ahead.
Not before all of you guys follow us on Twitter.
Hell yeah.
And I think we're begging
story,
now.
Yeah, this last story is from TSA. Oh, man.
They're at TSA, by the way, I think.
Yeah, they are.
They've got a
TSA.
Really cool Twitter account. Go ahead.
Oh, gee, I know.
Here's some bad news. The TSA is not as safe as we think they are making us. The TSA failed to detect weapons, bombs during most screening tests. Investigators found screeners mistest weapons and bombs at baggage checkpoints more often than not. A few more details on this. In a classified briefing, members of the House Homeland Security Committee learned that more than 70% of the time, undercover Department of Homeland Security investigators were able to get through TSA checkpoints with mock knives, guns, and explosives. But hey, that is surprisingly an improvement. Because just 2 years ago, they found that was a 95% test failure. So yay to that, 70%. All right. The Office of Inspector General has made 8 classified recommendations based on the undercover operation. In a statement, the TSA said they took the OIG findings very seriously and are implementing measures that will improve screening effectiveness at checkpoints. However, these measures are turning out to be incredibly costly and expensive, and it might not be a cost that the TSA can afford right now. What is happening? Members of Congress and the TSA want to replace their old scanners with new CT scanners, which use high-powered algorithms to detect explosives. But the rollout is slow. And again, like I said, it's incredibly expensive. So over the summer, the TSA launched a pilot program with the new CT scanners, which was still a year behind schedule. Last week, they announced an additional $4 million investment in the technology. Also worth noting is that American Airlines, if you're looking to book a flight for the holidays, has actually bought some of these machines to try and speed up the deployment. But basically, the core of this story is that TSA is not as making us as safe as we thought. This is really what people are.
Look, if you've ever had an interaction.
Hassan, listen to me before I toss to you.
Sorry.
What I'm saying is that there is this thing called security theater. We perceive that we are more safe than we actually are. It's actually not very cost effective whatsoever, but you feel a little bit safer. But now to have hard data that says, hey, I'm happy that you feel safer and that those machines that are incredibly clunky and slow down everyone's boarding process don't actually do shit for you. I want to get a response now, Hassan.
I have so many thoughts.
Okay.
Because this is something that I've known for some time now, and you would too if you've ever traveled domestically or internationally and you've ever had a single experience, just one, with a TSA agent. You already know that they're woefully underprepared for a terror attack or even finding anything.
Right.
I think it's just, and by the way, I love the high powered algorithm, which means like stop every brown person. That's what that means. That's literally that's the algorithm. They shouldn't have paid 75 or whatever amount of millions of dollars that they spend on it. I don't know how much money they spend, but they definitely have a bomb ass IG account, and you guys should check that out.
It's a
bunch of fake shit that they have on there. There's no way. They're like, oh, these are our findings, and it's like an orc knife the size of this. Like, no one's fucking taking that.
I don't know. Are you saying that the TSA is lying on Instagram? I will not. Look,
yeah,
it's one thing to allow all these weapons through. When you start telling me that their Instagram account is counterfeited, I think that this is an organization that's had huge problems, obviously. But The amount that they stop and search me, I think, is a reflection that they are dedicated to doing something. I don't know what. I literally haven't
groping you.
Taking, I mean, it must. There must be something about me. I look shifty. But if all of us go through, as you say, we have any interaction with them, they seem pretty determined and focused. Mm-hmm. I'm unclear, really, as to where the failing is. Is it technological?
Well, look, honestly, what I was thinking about when I was reading through the story is the Brussels attacks, is because that took place at the check-in, where there is really not a lot of security. And so we look at TSA as like they are the gatekeepers of security. And I absolutely experience that feeling of security theater in the sense I do feel safer when I've gone through this checkpoint. Now I am totally safe. But forget all the other places that there could be. That terrorists are like, oh, they're all focusing their attention on this, and now I'm going to focus my attention over here. It's all just sort of diversion techniques. We're really none the safer. I knew that when I got pulled over for my tampons when I was traveling to London one time, and they literally took out all my tampons. They're like, what is this? I'm like, it's candy. What do you think it is?
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah, it's guns.
That
it's weapons. Yeah.
Like, we don't use this. What
all right,
is
final
this
thought.
Thing?
Final thought,
but
Mark.
When they're letting 70% through the checkpoints. That sounds to me like the technology.
Grenades.
No good.
Grenades, Mark. They are literally in these findings, they found that grenades could be easily smuggled in through that fucking checkpoint. The only deterrent that TSA has in combating terrorism is making it as shitty as possible to fucking travel in America. It makes me so angry.
It is awful.
It is.
Oh,
awful.
Man.
Look, I'm not gonna make fun of like people that work minimum wage jobs, okay? I'm not gonna do that.
You're not.
But like,
I feel like you are right now.
No. Not at all. But look, the reality is, these people are not qualified. You could probably do half as good, you could do twice as good as a job if you had more qualified trainees and you had better qualifications, better training programs. You could probably make it swifter, a better experience.
All right.
Overall.
I don't know who's going to get pulled out of line.
I don't need to be stopped every time.
We got to wrap up. And on that note, happy holiday traveling. Stay safe. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time on TYT.
Bye.